20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, Packers fans, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Happy 4th of July to everybody. I am Jason Perrone, along with Paul Bredel and Mark Eckel. Paul, welcome back. We missed you last week. How are things up in the great state of Wisconsin?
Fantastic. It is hot as heck, though.
A little hot. Mark, how are we looking on the East Coast? How's the humidity?
It was a beautiful day today. I was on the beach. I actually have a little Packer story to tell you. I'm glad we're taping now. So my fiance and I are laying on the beach, and we're social distancing like you're supposed to. And it was pretty nice. I got to get finally people here come to their senses, and everybody's not on top of each other on the beach. And guys behind me, you know, about 10 feet or so behind, are playing that cornhole game, you know, just throwing to the things. And So I get up to throw a water bottle away or something. And I start walking, and I look at the bean bags. They got G's on them, like Green Bay Packer G's. And then I look at the, whatever you call the things that you throw the bags into, Green Bay Packers. I'm like, whoa, hey guys, who's the Packer fan? Oh, we are a Packer. I'm going to go. And then all four of them, yeah, Packer fan. You guys from Wisconsin? Nah, Georgia. I said, really? They said, yeah, you from Wisconsin? I said, nah, I'm a big Packer fan. I mentioned Pack-A-Day. I mentioned Packer Report. Oh my God, yeah, we love those things. Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, Packer fans are everywhere. That's all I got to say.
Which we already knew, but it's like literally, right. I was on a trip about 10 years ago, and I was in this small airport in Vieques, which is right off of Puerto Rico. I mean, we're talking like, you know, that it's an island that's would probably take you 5 minutes to drive across. And I'm at this small little airport that you take a puddle jumper over to San Juan in Puerto Rico so you can fly back to the States. I mean, obviously, you know, this airport's very, very tiny. And there's this little concession stand-like bar, and it is a Packers bar in Vieques, Puerto Rico. I mean, talk about being in every corner of the world. Like, it is. If you saw this bar, it's like it's no bigger than half of your living room. That's all I can say. And it's in the most unlikely of places. But yes, we are everywhere.
These guys were young too. These guys were young because I started talking for a little bit. The one guy that I talked to most, he was born the year they won, the year that Favre beat New England in the Super Bowl. So what's it make him, like 25 maybe?
Yeah, 25, 24.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I said, so you don't even remember Favre. You're all Rodgers. He says, yeah, my dad talks about Favre, but yeah, I'm an Aaron Rodgers. You know, I'm like, I said, I could tell you stories about Scott Hunter and Jerry Tagge if you really want to know.
He's like,
that's all right.
Well, cheers to that. Cheers to their parents. They obviously raised their kids right.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely good. All right, anyway,
sorry, I didn't mean to get us off track.
Well, it's all right. So it's 4th of July, but it's actually, we're recording it on Friday. And as is sometimes the case, we get lucky because the Friday news cycle or the news dump or whatever you want to call it. So it wasn't really a news dump, but it was reported on Friday that Cleveland Browns tight end David Njoku wants a trade. Now, obviously, a player requesting a trade doesn't mean they're necessarily going to get one. But, of course, player requests trade. Packers fans go crazy pontificating about how Green Bay can sign or acquire said player. David Njoku is not that, by far, it's not the first time that his name has been connected to the Packers in terms of, you know, trading for him. And there was a lot of talk last offseason that the Browns were, you know, heavy with tight ends, and is Njoku going to be available in a trade, and he's still on his rookie deal. So we talked a little bit before the show starts, but I'll kick it to each of you guys. I mean, all I'll say is he's scheduled to make $3 million this season in 2020. It goes up to $6 million in 2021, and I believe that is all fully guaranteed. And then that's the last year of his rookie deal. The Packers currently have Jay Sternberger, Mercedes Lewis, Robert Tonyan, and then you've got Josiah DeGuara in the mix, who's not necessarily going to play a pure tight end role. So, Mark, we'll start with you in terms of David Njoku, and is it a wise thing to do? Do you think the Packers will do it?
I don't think they will do it. I wouldn't. When you told me three, I thought he made more than that. I wasn't thinking he was on a rookie deal. $3 million is not bad for, I mean, First of all, what do you got to give up? I'm not trading a premium pick for him. Can I get him for what can I get him for? Fourth, fifth? If I can, you know, if I can get him for a mid-round pick, I think about it. Now, keep in mind the Packers should have an extra fourth, maybe two extra fourths next year from the free agent losses of Blake Martinez and Brian Bulaga, right? They should get a couple of compensatory picks there. So if that's, I mean, I'm not giving up a lot because he wants out. You know, Cleveland doesn't have a lot of bargaining power. I mean, I thought Cleveland would trade him when they signed Hooper, right? I mean, that just made sense. Man, you put him in that offense, but everything else the Packers have, that offense, I think the offense is going to be pretty good anyway. Now you add another weapon like the Joku. I don't think they're going to do it, but if they did it, I'd be mildly excited.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more of a financial proposition. I don't know, Paul, what's your take?
Yeah, I agree with Mark, and I tweeted it out earlier today. I would like to see Njoku join the team, but I don't think it's going to happen either. Logistically speaking, from a financial standpoint, I think they could make it work this year. Spotrac has the Packers at just under $12 million in cap space, but as our friend Ken Ingles tells us, not all of that's spendable. They still have a couple rookies to sign. They're going to want money left over for in-season. They have some big free agents coming up, so any rollover is going to help as well. But that $3 million, they could make work, but next off season is where we run into the issues. His salary doubles, and we all know Kenny Clark, Bakhtiari, Aaron Jones, Kevin King, Jamal Williams, Corey Lindsey are all free agents as well. So that just further complicates things. But in a perfect world, if they could land them for a day three pick, and I just looked it up, Mark. They're getting three compensatory picks or projected next year because of Kyler Fackrell as well.
Yeah, but he'll be a little lower, I think, right? He'll probably be a six.
Yep, over the cap has them as a fourth, fifth, and sixth rounder. So they have some extra picks to work with if they did want to make the trade. And typically with tight ends, we don't see them make a ton of noise their rookie year. So, and especially with this just weird offseason that we've had, who really knows what we can expect from DeGuara? So if we could have Njoku in there, and he is unproven at this point, he's shown flashes, he's super athletic, but drops have been an issue as well. But you never know, a fresh start might do him well. But I say all that to once again say it's not going to happen.
Is he going to get traded though?
It only takes one dance partner.
Right. I think he will.
He's demanding it, you know, fairly hard at this point, so I would think that the Browns would give in at some point, especially with Hooper.
That's right. Yeah, I thought, like I said, when I saw that the Browns, I didn't think, because Hooper was a guy that was, of course, a lot of rumors about it, the Packers like wanting him and having interest. And again, the money was too much. But when the Browns signed him, I was like, the Browns signed him? Okay, I guess they're going to trade. You know, it's kind of crazy to have that, especially the next year, like you said, when his cap doubles to six, a lot of money. That's a lot of cap space being devoted to tight end position.
Yeah, I think they made their decision with who they wanted to pay at tight end, and then Njoku's almost kind of doing the team a favor. I mean, you'd rather trade a player and get some value for him than let him walk on his own, right?
Exactly.
Or maybe not. I mean, maybe they feel like, you know, if they go full Ted Thompson, and I'm saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek, their compensatory draft picks are like gold to them, and they want that. But I would always say if you can get some value for a player, obviously do it before they walk away and you don't get anything except for that compensatory pick, and you just never know how that's going to pan out. So that's the David Njoku portion of the show. There was also reports earlier, it was announced earlier this week that the preseason will be shortened by two games, so the Packers will not be playing their preseason game against the Arizona Cardinals or the Kansas City Chiefs. They only have two games now. There'll be one in Green Bay and one on the road. So my question to you guys is, you know, the obvious question is, how might this impact young players now only getting two games to showcase their talents versus four? And on the flip side, might the NFL just say, well, that's how it's going to be anyway, and this is a perfect excuse to kind of build in a beta test on a shortened preseason in a future, I guess, what we'll call like normal season? Paul, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I said before the show, I'm usually not a huge preseason person. I mean, of course, I love watching the games. But this year, I was really looking forward to watching Jordan Love, and we're gonna not get as many games of those, and hopefully, we at least get a couple. But a couple of the Packers rookies are going to, you know, we expect take some meaningful snaps this year. A.J. Dillon, Josiah DeGuara, as I mentioned, and potentially Kamal Martin as well. And with the virtual offseason that's taken place, they're already behind the eight ball a little bit. I mean, and all rookies are. It's not that just the Packers are shorthanded in this scenario. But, you know, those three are in particular. And we might expect a slow start from them to start the season, more so than this, if this was a normal year.
Yeah, and I think three of those guys are unsigned. So DeGuara, Jake Hansen, and Kamal Martin have yet to sign their contracts. So they're not even permitted, I don't think, to participate in as much. So that also becomes a factor too. Mark, what's your take on the preseason, especially as somebody who was around a lot of players that had to play in four preseason games? I don't, what was the consensus amongst players over the last couple of years that you were around teams?
I mean, not just a couple of years, forever. Players hate preseason. They don't, I mean, no, that I'm all in favor of cutting it to two. I've been saying they should cut it to two for 10 years or more now. I mean, it's not needed. I think the bigger question is the NFLPA today said they want no preseason games. Now, that's two. I've always thought two was a good number. One home, one away, that's all you need. But now they're saying if the 2020 season even happens, no preseason games, that first month of the season is going to be sloppy as can be. I mean, it really is. Because those first four games are going to be like preseason games because, you know, football is football is the most team-oriented sport of all. Because you really need that. You really do need to work together, whether it's the offensive lineman as a unit, the defense, you know, putting a system together. And I really feel for teams with first-year coaches because they're going to be really set back, you know. The Giants, the Redskins, the Cowboys to some extent, although Mike did keep a lot of Cowboy assistants around, so that's probably not quite as bad. But they're really going to be struggling because that's what preseason is about, is putting your system in place and working on your things. It's not about winning and losing. It never is, because you don't game plan for that team you're playing, but you're game planning for yourself. You're putting in your offense. You're putting in your defense. You're different things that you want to see and do. If there's no preseason games, or even down to two, it's going to be kind of it's really hurting the young new staffs and the new coaching staffs in the league.
Well, it's not Matt LaFleur's first season, but this was a year he's going to really start to implement his own offense. And so it's almost like you have a rookie head coach situation where it's a brand new system that a lot of these guys need those reps to go through. And there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of comments, a lot of talk about it. I mean, a week from now when we talk, then you know, the next time, there's probably going to be updates and more that we know about how the league is going to proceed, because we're into July now. So camps are set to start at the end of the month, so we're in the month where stuff's going to start to happen. So the league doesn't have a lot of time to get some of these things figured out. They're going to have answers. So my assumption is each week that we go between now and camp, we're going to have some solid information to report on, and we'll have a lot more clarity on what the Packers are going to be able to do and what they're going to do. I guess the one thing that benefits them is that they held the first part of camp close to their stadium, so it's not like they're one of the teams that ventured far away from home. They're not going to be at St. Norbert College for the first time since the 50s, but I don't think that's creating a huge, huge issue for the team. I think it's more what you said, both Paul and Mark, just the reps and those guys need as much exposure to it as they can in a live simulation. I mean, you know, you can learn something by reading and watching videos, but until you're out there doing it, especially in a performance-based business like the NFL, which, you know, it doesn't get any tougher than that. So I guess we'll have more to talk about on that probably in the next week or two. But what I wanted to talk about today, what we kind of have an opportunity to discuss, was earlier this week, the Athletic's Matt Schneidman, who covers the Packers, he wrote about his 30 best players on the Packers in 2020. So it's Matt's list. It's, you know, he did it on his own, so it's just one take on who the top 30 players are. So there were some guys that didn't make the list. I can tell you, if you haven't seen it or haven't read it yet, there was no 2020 rookies that made the list, but he did include free agents. So Devin Funchess is on the list. Christian Kirksey is on the list. Rick Wagner is on the list. But if we want to start, guys, I mean, look at the meat of the list, which is the top 10. Maybe we each kind of compare our top 10s, because I don't think I had an issue with the players, but I reorganized my top 10 in terms of who should go where. So, Mark, it's starting with you. I guess, okay. You know, the spoiler alert, number one on the list was Za'Darius Smith. So, it wasn't Aaron Rodgers, for those who are big Aaron Rodgers supporters and lovers, but Za'Darius Smith at one. Any issues with Smith at one, would you have changed that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, I would have changed it.
Okay.
I did change it. And I did my top 10 to match, you know, that one. And we had nine of the same 10. And we had one guy in the same spot. We both had Elgton Jenkins number 9. But other than that, we didn't have anybody the same. So do you want me to read mine?
You can go off of your list, and then I've got Matt's list here so I can help do the comparison as far as what he had.
So should we do it 10 to 1 or 1 to 10?
Let's go from 10 to 1.
All right. My 10, and again, as if you've listened to me the last month or two, I like this guy more than most people. I have Kevin King number 10.
And Matt had Preston Smith at number 10.
He did not have Kevin King on his list. I think he had him 11 or 12. But and again, my list, and we as we talked prior to coming on, I put a lot of weight on position, and I also put weight on how good you are compared to, like, how important would it be for the guy to not be, like, how badly would they miss him? If Kevin King, God forbid, gets hurt, because he never gets hurt, you know, what would his replacement be? That's why I have Kevin King on the list ahead of Corey Linsley, who he had 8. I don't have Corey Linsley in my top 10 because, and I think he's a good player, don't get me wrong. I think I would have had him 11 or 12 probably, but I think Lucas Patrick has showed that he could step in if he has to, and it's not the end of the world. So anyway, Kevin King is 9, or is 10. Elgton Jenkins, like I said, the same as him, is number 9. Number 8, I have Aaron Jones. I believe he had Jones a lot higher, right?
Yeah, he has Aaron Jones at 4.
And again, you know, if you listen to us, you know my feelings on running backs. Number 7, I have Preston Smith.
Okay, he's got 10. Jair.
Yeah, I have Jair 6. Okay. I have Davante Adams 5. I have Za'Darius 4. Now, 2 and 3, they're really 2A and 2B. And it's the same when we talk about free agency and who should they keep. I have Clark 3 and Bakhtiari 2. But, like I said, they're both 2.5 to me or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I love them both. I think they're 2 and 3. And number 1's got to be Aaron Rodgers until he's not here anymore.
Okay. So he had Za'Darius 1, Bakhtiari 2, Adams 3, Aaron Jones 4. Rodgers is listed as 5 on that particular list. And then, Mark, you had Kevin King in the top 10, whereas Matt had him at 12. Paul,
I didn't have Linsley.
Well, you didn't have Linsley on yours. So, Paul, we'll do the same format. So going from 10 to 1, how did it shake out for you?
Okay, so I had 9 of the same top 10 that Matt did. And in terms of Mark's list, I promised the listeners we did not talk beforehand.
No, we didn't. We did not.
But our criteria was very similar, where we took position into where that was just valued very highly. So at number 10, I had Elgton Jenkins. Number 9, I had Adrian Amos. I think that he's very steady. He doesn't make those big splashy plays, but he's a great presence to have back there, and I think we noticed the difference last year. Yep. Number 8, I got Jair Alexander. Number 7, I have Preston Smith, 12.5 sacks last year. Then I have 6, Aaron Jones. 5, Davante Adams. 4, I have Kenny Clark. 3, Za'Darius Smith. 2, Bakhtiari. And 1, Rodgers. Once again, the quarterback position. Yeah. without Aaron Rodgers, this team isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, Amos was ranked 11, so he almost cracked the top 10. So that's, and I don't think you'd get much argument there, Paul. He was very steady, and like you said, I think that was the perfect word to describe him. I took the list more to the letter of, instead of like, you know, value or important, 30 best players. So the way I had it shake out was I moved Lindsley to 10th. I had the same top 10, like the same guys that he did, but I moved Lindsley to 10th. You know, he gave up more sacks than any center last season. So, that moved him down for me. So that has, I had Preston at 9. I put Jair at 8. I moved Elgton Jenkins to 7. And then I still had Clark at 6, Rodgers, Aaron Jones, Adams, Bakhtiari, and Za'Darius Smith. So, I mean, that's the beauty of lists like this, is that the criteria are going to be different for everybody, and no two lists sure. are going to look alike. But just some things that stood out to me beyond that, if you look at the list in its entirety, we've mentioned it many times. There's 4 guys in Matt's top 10 who are, and you know, if you take your guys' list, it bumps up to 5. There's half the list are guys who are in the last year of their deal. So, I mean, if you think about that, these are most important players, best players, you know, however you want to shake it out. Mark, does that concern you, or is this just life in the NFL that you've got good players and you can only pay so many of them? And this is just, it seems like they're kind of up against it a little bit more this year than they are in a lot of other years. So maybe it just stands out to me that there's more important guys that are up for new deals.
Yeah, this year is life in the NFL, but as opposed to this past offseason, the 2020 offseason, the only guy that I cared about was Bulaga. Actually, Mason Crosby, the kicker I cared about, because you don't want to go through one of those kicking carousels. Just look at the Bears, all right? I mean,
and the Vikings.
Yeah, they're right next to 2 next-door neighbors, right? So, yeah, you don't want to get into that mess. So Mason Crosby was important, and they took care of him right away. Bulaga, unfortunately, they decided they couldn't afford him, and they let him go. So that was it, though. I didn't care about Blake Martinez. He's not that good. Kyle Fackrell, you kind of knew he was going to leave. He's not going to stay around to be the fourth linebacker. This year was not a worrisome free agency year. Next year is very worrisome. And again, I think if this was a more of a normal offseason, they would have gotten at least one of those 5 guys done by now. There was a story out this week that Kenny Clark and the Packers have been talking, so hopefully that'll get done sooner than later. There's been rumors, or not rumors, but reports earlier that Aaron Jones and the Packers have talked. So there is some. I would be surprised if, when the 2020 season ends, that if all 5 guys are still on side. I think sometime between the 4th of July and the end of the 2020 season, at least one, if not 2 of these guys are assigned 2 extensions. I don't think they'll go into next offseason with all 5 being, you know, free agents or testing tomorrow. I don't think that'll happen.
I agree with you, Paul. In terms of your comfort level with that group, how are you feeling right now, knowing that I think you probably agree, I know I'm speaking for you, but I think we've talked enough that you probably would see at least 1 or 2 of those guys signed. So it's not going to be all 5 or 4, but does that number concern you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of a double-edged sword if you think about it. Obviously, there's a lot of key players that are at the end of their contract, but the good news is the Packers have a number of key players that they're in their position where they have to make these difficult decisions. So I'll try to put it somewhat of a positive spin on it, but they're not going to re-sign all 5. My mindset is if they can get Bakhtiari and Clark, and if that's it, I'm going to be happy. Those aren't going to be cheap contracts, but those are 2 guys that definitely deserve to be paid and that this team needs. And then anyone after that, whether it's Kevin King, if they do end up working out something with Aaron Jones, I don't think Lindsley's going to be back. That's gravy to me. But looking at the rest of Matt's list, so those are the notable free agents, but there's going to be a lot of well-known guys and guys who are going to see meaningful playing time this year that could be in their last season as well. So Dean Lowry and Billy Turner, their contracts aren't up at the end of the year, but the Packers have an out where the dead cap hits less than the cap hit, so they'd actually save money. Same thing goes for Rick Wagner and Christian Kirksey. And then Devin Funchess is in a one-year deal as well. So there's a lot of names in Matt's top 30 here. I mean, I think that's close to 10 between all the guys we've talked about. That, and not all of them are going to be gone, but that could be gone come this time next year.
Yeah, well, there's going to be some transition, and they'll have the draft next year as well to kind of continue addressing how they want this team to look in going forward. But that is a lot of names. I mean, you mentioned some points that I had just to talk about. So one thing that we've talked about before in our group is the defensive line and how their depth is a little questionable. There were only two guys on this list. So Kenny Clark at 6 and Dean Lowry at 24 on Matt's list. I don't know where you guys would rank Lowry. I didn't go that far either. But, you know, Lowry got the extension last year. He did very little to make good on it. No Tyler Lancaster on there. Kingsley Keke wasn't on there. And Martavius Adams wasn't on there. Mark, we know how you feel about Adams. Ty Summers and Lucas Patrick beat all of them out to round out the list. So does that concern you? Mark, we'll start with you as far as the defensive line. Does this just more, you know, kind of amplify our point that the defensive line may be an area of weakness that not many are paying much attention to?
No, well, here's my – we have talked about this in the past. I mean, Kiki's a guy – well, you can't put him on the top 30 right now because he's played about 30 plays.
Right.
I mean, how can you put him? But there is potential there. And no one expected him to play a lot as a rookie last year. Now, this is the year, and Paul's written this a lot about how this – I think you just have a story out today, right, about the 18 and 19 drafts.
Yeah.
This is the year for the CDs guys. So Kiki's got to – this is a key year for Keke in that, you know, he has to become at least a good rotational player. I'm not saying he has to go out there and be a star or even a, you know, but he has to play. He has to make plays when he's out there. He's got to take, you know, 25 snaps to 30 snaps a game. The other guy is, what is his name?
Lancaster.
Right? No, well, Lancaster, we know what he is.
Montrevious Adams.
Backup. Well, Adams stinks.
Trayvon Hester,
who they just signed. Yeah. You know, he's not a bad player. He really is. Why he bounces around all the time, I really don't know. He's not a pass rusher. But the Packers don't need a pass. They need a run stopper, and he can do that. He's not a bad run stopper. Again, is he top 30 player on the team? Not right now. You can't say that because he never isn't even on the team yet. But he could be a guy that could. I'm not to answer your original question. No, I'm not as concerned about the defensive line as everybody else is because I think between a Keke, a Hester, maybe a Willis, who I've been talking about for the last month too, between, you know, if you can get enough minimal snaps from the three of them to equal one good, you know, player, I'm fine with that. Plus, I think Gary's going to have his hand on the ground a little bit more than we think. They put Zadarius's hand on the ground a lot. So they're not defensive linemen, but they play that position during the course of the game. So, yeah, I'm not as panicky about the defensive line as I am about other things on the team.
And, Paul, you've written a lot about it, so anything to add to what Mark said?
Yeah, I'm going to take the other side of this one. I am pretty concerned about that interior defensive line. I agree with what Mark said with Keke, Hester, Lowry, Lancaster. The players are there and the potential's there, but that's a lot of, you know, weight that and, you know, potential risk that they're putting into those guys and hoping that they perform. And obviously that's, you know, just life in the NFL, and that comes with the territory. You know, I wrote about today for Cheesehead TV, the Packers are banking on internal development from their 2018 and 2019 draft classes, and that's what the good teams do. You don't see the good teams going out and spending, you know, millions and millions of dollars every offseason. They draft well and they develop well. And so that's what the Packers are relying on, and it's what they should be relying on. But there was just such a void next to Kenny Clark last season, and it's just a lot of unknowns. And obviously unknowns can be, you know, scary. And I think that's the part that has me worried. Keke hopefully steps up. You know, like Mark said, he's high on Trayvon Hester. We know what Lowry and we know what Lancaster can do at this point, but we haven't seen enough from that group to instill confidence in me either.
Well, I was just going to say, I think if Lancaster isn't necessarily your third guy, but if he's your fourth, fifth guy in the rotation, like with many other players, then that makes more sense.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I think Kiki, if he hits his potential, and it's only his second year, so I don't think we should be expecting him to reach his ceiling by any means. But if he can become, you know, a solid number two next to Clark, and everyone gets bumped down, so now Dean Lowry's a three, Lancaster's a four, Hester fits in wherever he may, you know, okay, now we've got something there. But there's just a lot of unknowns, and we got to see it first.
Yeah.
And keep one other thing in mind, too. We're talking three because they play a three, you know, quote-unquote a 3-4. But a lot of – they go with two a lot. A lot of times they go with a 2-4-5. You know, they'll have – that's where Zadarius, you know, he's an outside linebacker, but he's really playing defensive end. They'll have Clark and Lowry as just two guys with their hands down.
So even fewer snaps to divide amongst those guys. Then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the other one, it's
– Lowry, 2 years ago, Lowry wasn't a bad player. Last year, I don't know what happened, but he didn't have a good year. You know, they're also counting on him to have a bounce back year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to justify.
He may not. I mean, he may be going the wrong way. I don't know, but I think the Packers are counting on him to have a bounce back
year. Well, they made an investment in him, so you're absolutely right there. I mean, one other that we mentioned and we talked about is Rick Wagner at 20. We've talked about Wagner before, and again, it's not ideal to have one of your tackles, your supposed starting tackles, that low on a list like this. Now, again, it's just Matt's list, but I don't necessarily disagree with where he's ranked. Now, that said, his potential other option or plan B, if Wagner doesn't work out at right tackle, has been talked about as Billy Turner. Well, Billy Turner was ranked 21st. So, you know, I don't know how well that bodes. Now, we knew there was going to be a drop-off. You don't just replace a Brian Bulaga. Mark, I correct me if I'm wrong. I may be brain farting here, but I don't know if you were a huge fan of Bulaga departing. So you know that there's going to be a drop off. But Rick Wagner at 20, you know, is there anything to that? You know, now once again, it's kind of the same question. What's the concern level going into this season?
Well, that's my biggest concern by leaps and bounds. I like Brian Bulaga. I understand why they let Bulaga go. I understand. You know, they had some cap situations. He didn't get crazy money. He really didn't, but I understand. And he has an injury history, and he is getting a little older. So I'm not like, oh, my God, I can't believe they let Brian Bulaga go. I would have liked to keep him. That's just me. But I understand why they didn't. With that said, I would have drafted a right tackle a lot. It's like if not, my mock draft, I had him taking a right tackle at 29. Now, Jordan Love, that came out of, you know, that kind of surprised us all a little bit. I still would have taken one in the second round. I thought right tackle was the biggest need on the team before the draft. When, you know, as soon as Bulaga left, I said right tackle is the biggest need on this team. They obviously didn't sign anyone in free agency. Well, what they did, they signed Wagner. I'm sorry. But I hope I'm wrong and they're right. I don't think Rick Wagner is very good. I just don't. I think he's a backup guy. Guy you want as your third guy to fill. I think he's Jared Veltier, maybe not as good. So that's a guy I'd really like to see come back. But no, right tackle is without a doubt my number one by far concern about the 2020 Green Bay Packers.
Well, they signed him before they drafted, but it was one of those situations where maybe they saw ahead and realized, hey, we're not going to be able to address everything in the draft, and we don't think that any of the guys we would draft at tackle that are going to be an impact guy are going to be there as late as we're picking. I don't know, Paul, what was your take on that?
Yeah, I agree. I'm very concerned with the tackle position. You know, if you had told me Blog isn't going to be back beforehand, I wouldn't have liked it, and I still don't, but I understood. If you would have told me Blog isn't back and they're not taking a tackle with a top 100 pick, I would have been shocked, and I was shocked that they did not do that, because Wagner, like Mark said, he's not as athletic as Bulaga. He's just not the player that Bulaga is. So the big question this year is how big of a downgrade is he going to be? And I don't mean for that to sound mean. He just is. And another thing, you know, people got upset about Bulaga missing playing time, you know, way more than what they should have. But Rick Wagner's only played all 16 games one time since 2014.
Wow.
So yeah. even if we get a, you know, Renaissance Rick Wagner 2015-16 when he was at his best, you know, still not Bulaga level, we still have to worry about him missing time. And there is not a ton of good options behind him either. I tweeted this out about a month ago. So Rick Wagner's taken 5,686 career NFL snaps at tackle. Second is Billy Turner at 491. And Billy Turner just working in space is not ideal. I know that might be the go-to option, but that's not, you know, that's not something I necessarily want to be seeing either. Next is Alex Light with 150 snaps. We saw how that went last year. And in 2017, Lane Taylor played a couple weeks at left tackle for Bakhtiari. Held up well, but that was in 2017. He has 117 career snaps. Then there's four guys with zero. So if Wagner struggles or gets injured, which is certainly a possibility, I don't know what the heck they're going to do or how they're going to Band-Aid that up. I know this year they're looking to play with more two tight end sets, so maybe having Big Dog Mercedes Lewis in on that right side quite a bit to help him could be an option. But I agree with Mark. This is, you know, it's worrisome, especially with an aging quarterback. Aaron Rodgers can still move around, but he's not as mobile as he once was, and he likes to hang on to the football.
Paul is
he's going to need time back there.
I was going to say, Paul is an Office enthusiast, and Mark, I don't know if you ever watched the show The Office, but it reminds me of that scene where Michael Scott walks in and says, "We are screwed," and that's kind of how I feel like the Packers are going to be sitting if this Wagner-Turner thing doesn't pan out.
Well, you said earlier that they're going to change the offense a little bit. Yeah, I might have Aaron roll to the left a lot.
Right. It's kind of like,
even with LaFleur's outside zone run scheme, you know, a big part of the tackle's job is sealing that edge. You know, if Jones doesn't have an area to bounce it, he's going to look to hit that corner, and can he do that?
Right. No, for sure. I was thinking the same thing, and so that's going to be something to keep an eye on this season. You know, kind of a feel good moment here rather than an area of concern for me was seeing Alan Lazard at 14, and it just makes you think for a second, you know, 1 year after he was cut, he had to clear waivers, he was added to the practice squad, and then he gets called up midseason, and he ends up destroying the Lions' hopes and dreams twice. The Packers didn't address wide receiver. We know that. It's been talked about over and over again. But does Lazard's rise, now he doesn't give you the speed, athleticism, and flashy talent that these first-round receivers did this year, but does that give you a little bit more of a comfortable feeling with regards to the fact that the wide receiver room is largely going to be the guys that were there last year, and with the exception of Devin Funchess, and then if Reggie Begelton's able to make any noise, which is an outside shot. But, Mark, does that make you feel – does Lazard's ascension last year make you feel markedly better about the receiver position?
No, I'm just the opposite on that one. And I like Alan Lazard, I do. Great story. Like you said, cut. And come back, but he shouldn't. And again, this is just one man's list, and I disagree with that strongly. I don't think he is the 14th best player on the Green Bay Packers. And if he is, then the Green Bay Packers aren't. If a guy that was cut is your 14th best player, that's, to me, that's a scary thing. That's like, that means you really don't have 14 good players, right? I mean, so no, I wouldn't have had him. That Lazard would not make my top 20, to be honest with you. He's a good, you know, he's a good story. He's a good. I'm not sure he's going to be their number two next year. I think he's going to get some snaps. Obviously, he's going to get snaps. But there's, and we've talked about this in the past, the wide receivers is going to be very interesting. You have Adams, who we all have in the top 10, right? Top 5, 6, whatever. That second spot, it could be anybody. It could be Funchess. It could be Lazard. It could be St. Brown. There's a lot of St. Brown hype coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as everybody speculates, because there's nothing else to do but speculate right now. You know, MVS, you know, a lot of people are comparing him to, you know, he had a bad year, but, you know, he was hurt. And a similar situation was Devontae Adams, who his second year, people wanted to cut him because he didn't have a good second. But he was hurt. And then you saw when he was healthy what he could do. So I think I don't think any of the Packers' other wide receivers should be as high as number 14. That's just my take on that.
No, and I think this is another situation where if Lazard does end up being the third or fourth guy, like maybe he should, then maybe that's a more ideal case scenario. Paul, would you agree with that? Or what are your thoughts on Lazard as the de facto number two, at least entering camp?
Yeah, I can understand why he's, you know, being listed as that, just because of the performance. You know, EQ is injured, Funchess is new, MVS had a down second half of the season. But I'm not as worried about the receiver position in general as I think most are. You know, with the guys that they have, MVS, EQ, Lazard, Funchess, obviously Devontae Adams, And then we look at the pass catchers that are going to be in this offense as well. DeGuara, potentially, Tanyan, Sternberger, Jones, Williams, Dylan out of the backfield. There's a lot of options on this team as far as pass catchers go. So I'm not as concerned about that as most. But it's kind of like with the Dean Lowry. You know, as I had talked about, and Jason, what you just alluded to, if Lazard's your third guy or even your fourth, then you're doing really well. But coming, he had a nice season last year. It's a great story, like Mark said. But there's film on him now. Can he handle those reps as if he does go into the season as the number two guy with the number two corner on him every single week in and out and playing 60, 70 snaps, whatever it is, every single week? Can he still maintain that level of production? And then, you know, that's the big question that, you know, I have. Obviously, I hope he does. It's very promising, but he needs to answer that. And if he can still produce in that larger role with guys, you know, the defenders now saying, watch for 13.
Right. No, I agree with that because he wasn't afraid of the moment. You know, when he came in the fourth quarter against the Lions the first game, he played much bigger than his stature showed, and he also had a great game in the season finale. Now, the Lions were trying to win the game, but they also didn't have a whole lot else going on. I don't think Darius Slay was really trying as hard as he could either, so there's some credence there too. Is he going to be able to ascend now that he's got that attention that's going to get paid to him? So the receiver position, obviously another one to keep an eye on, and the competition that those guys are going to have. Mark, you mentioned Equanimeous St. Brown. I am one that just has my fingers crossed that he can just blossom. I know that that's asking for a lot, and I'm betting on, you know, not the most sure thing, but if he does, I think that's going to make this entire offense a lot better. And that's saying, you know, Aaron Rodgers with the second year and a very motivated, you know, Aaron Rodgers having just seen his team draft a rookie quarterback, another season of Aaron Jones, you add Dylan in there, Sternberger. Like, I think this offense could really take off if some of these guys blossom and, you know, and do what we hope that they can do. But I was going to go back to the defensive side on the defensive backfield. So there were two guys I want to get your guys' takes on. One is Chandon Sullivan, who was ranked at 23, which for me I think was too low. I thought he played pretty well. He had some moments where he didn't look great, and he's kind of being penciled in as the nickel corner right now. I think there's a lot that needs to be said and done before that actually happens. But, you know, I think he'll prove 23 was not the most accurate. And I think we'll, you know, we could even see him in the top 15 next year, but that's him reaching his ceiling. And then the other defensive back was Raven Green. Now, Raven Green missed all of last year, so maybe that's why he's not on the list. But you've got a sample size of what he could do, and the Packers liked him enough to save one of their IR designated to return spots. So I don't know if you feel like Green not being on the list was a miss or not, but Mark, we'll start with you. As far as Sullivan, and are you, you know, how are you feeling about him being the penciled in nickel corner, and then do you think Raven Green should have been on this list?
I wanted the time. Sullivan, I think 23 is kind of fair. Next year now, like you said, you know, he needs to prove himself. He's another guy that came out of nowhere. I mean, he was cut. When the Packers signed him, I don't think anybody said, oh, hey, they signed Chandon Sullivan, look out now. Now we're good. No, people signed him and they thought, okay, he'll get cut in camp. I mean, you know, I don't think most people didn't have him on their 53 when people were trying to guess who's going to be on the 53. But he did. He played hard. He had a good year. I think 20 something is a good number for him. I think he will. I think he is penciled in. But you know, it's pencil, not ink, because it's been mentioned that they might move Savage to the nickel slot, to the slot corner spot at times. They might move Alexander inside. And Paul and I have a new favorite player, I think, in Kadar Holman.
Yes, sir.
Who might see time out. And I could see them putting him outside and moving Alexander inside on certain times. So he's in the – I mean, there is a little bit of depth if Sullivan continues to improve and if Holman becomes the guy that some of us think he can be. They're okay there. Now, Raven Green, now you guys know Raven Green's one of my favorites. He went to James Madison, where my daughter went to school. They graduated at the same time, the same year. So I do have a little soft spot for Raven Green. I was on him when the Packers signed him as an undrafted guy. He was the guy that I was saying, watch this guy. And he made the team. I was like, oh, my God, he made the team. So, no, I'm a little partial there. But I could see Lee. I mean, like you said, he missed all last year, so I could see why you wouldn't put him in your top 30 for that reason alone.
Yeah, I think that probably had a lot to do with it. Paul, what is your take on Sullivan and Green in the secondary?
Yeah, so I agree with Green being left off just because of how last year ended for him. Yes. And played about six quarters, but certainly has the potential, and hopefully we see him on the field for most of this season and then crack the top 30 or maybe top 20 next year. Who knows? But in terms of Sullivan, I understand why he's penciled in. If we look at the potential options, like Mark mentioned and Goody said after the draft, Darnell Savage could play down there. Personally, I'd rather see Darnell roaming rather than kind of pigeonhole to one particular position. Goody also mentioned Jair Alexander, another one where I'd rather see him out wide. I think that's just better using his talent. Not that we won't see either of them in the slot. And then the other guy you mentioned as well was Josh Jackson. And if you're looking at Sullivan and Jackson, you know, I think you'd give Sullivan the edge at this point, just considering that Jackson barely saw the field last year. But Sullivan falls into the same category as Lazard, as I just talked about. Had a really nice year. His numbers, you know, wherever you look, whether it's just the stats or Pro Football Focus metrics, whatever they are, they were super impressive. But once again, it was a small sample size. So if he is the Packers' go-to nickel corner this year, and he's playing, you know, down in, down out, he probably won't maintain that level. That's all pro level production that he was doing. But can he, you know, keep playing at a high level? And like Lazard, that's the big question that he has to answer when he's, you know, the focus and seeing a much higher volume of snaps.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting because there were a couple guys that free agents that haven't played with the Packers yet. They made the list. Green wasn't on it. So, I mean, and again, this is just one person's take on the whole thing, but at least it provoked a nice chat, and it kind of gives you a chance to sit back and take inventory and almost as fans to have us answer the question of how comfortable are you with the 2020 Packers? I mean, those were kind of some of my big points. I don't know. Mark, did you have anything else that stood out to you on the list that we haven't talked about?
And again, I should have wrote the whole list down, and I didn't. Tyler Irvin didn't make the list, did he?
He was in the 20s.
Okay. 22.
Yeah. All right. Oh, that's fine. And I'm sorry. I for some reason I thought he didn't make it, and I thought he should have, and he did. So never mind.
Paul, what about you? Was there anything else that stood out to you on the list that we haven't covered?
No, we hit on all the points. I think the biggest thing is Kenny Clark at 6. I think you need to be higher than that.
Oh yeah.
Well, and that just leads credence to, like Mark, you said, one of these guys is going to be signed by the end of this year. I don't see how Clark isn't the first in line. Do you agree?
Well, no. I mean, it doesn't matter who goes first. I mean, yes, I think Clark should be the top priority. Although Bakhtiari is so good too. I mean, like I said, they're 1-1A, 2-2A in my list of top 10. It's a matter of how, you know, the agent. What kind of relationship do you have with him? How easy is he? Some agents play more hardball than others. I mean, that's just the way it is. The guy that gets done first might not be the top priority. It just might be that got done first. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like with the draft picks. You know, who's the first draft pick they signed was their last pick, I believe, right? Just how it gets done. It doesn't always matter. The timing isn't as important as just getting it done. I don't care if they get Kenny Clark done next week or, you know, in December, as long as it gets done, I'll be happy. And I think it will. There's no, they would be, I mean, they've all but said it's going to get done. It's just a matter of, you're talking about a lot of money. And they might even agree on the amount of money, but then it's, does he get it in the first 3 years? Do they backload it? How much is guaranteed? You know, how much does he get in the signing bonus? There's a lot of, when you're talking like over $100 million, which is what his total is going to be right around, and there's a lot goes into it. So they're not as easy to get done as maybe Kevin King's deal. That won't be, but I think that's the one they could get done right away because he doesn't have the leverage. If I'm negotiating against his agent, I'm saying, listen, your guy's been hurt. You know, we paid him and he didn't play for, you know, he missed all these games. You owe me a little something now, you know? We're willing to give him this right now, and we'll take the chance that he can stay healthy and get that deal done, you know? Believe me, I hated doing it, but part of the job that you had to do was dealing with contract stuff and talking to agents, talking to the cat people, and the cat people, they never, you know, the agents love to tell you stuff, and the cat people don't tell you anything. So it's a lot of times it's one sided, but you know, you try to be balanced when you, when I wrote stories about that, that kind of, you know, contract stuff.
Yep.
It's kind of a pain. It was a pain to write about. So I can't imagine what it's like actually being the guy who's getting it done.
Well, contracts aren't necessarily the sexiest thing to read about unless you're really into the analytical stuff like that. I mean, some might really enjoy it and love it, but the, like you said, the end result, I think, is what we're all kind of...
Get it done.
Yeah, just get it done and what we're looking at. So, Paul, what do we got? We got 4th of July weekend and a couple more weeks before training camp starts. So what can we look out for from you at Cheesehead TV and Dairyland Express?
Just continuing on with the player profiles and getting ramped up for training camp. Super excited. And then at Dairyland, too, also Brewers season starting up. Buck season as well, playoffs coming. And then Badgers looking at recruiting and the football and basketball season's coming up.
Do all that, too, Paul?
Yes, I do.
Oh, my God. I got to say, no, I'm impressed. I mean, you write 1,000 stories a week on the Packers. Now you're going to be adding the Brewers and the Bucks to that, too?
Yep, they're there.
Do you ever sleep?
I get about 6-7 hours, just enough.
A week?
Yeah.
No, listen, that's a compliment. I love guys that work hard. I used to think I worked hard when I actually worked. God bless you.
I mean, I appreciate
that's a lot,
that. Thank
that's,
you.
That's a lot to take on. Great. I
mean, so Mark, do you want to follow that up with what you're working on over at Packer Report this week?
No, it's fine. No, I'm going to write 2 good stories. Monday, I'm going to write about guys that were on the 2019 Packers that might not be on the 2020 Packers. And okay. I'm going to have a couple names on there that might surprise some people. And then, of course, I have my number series continues. I did the 60s. The best players to wear 60 to 69 ran just yesterday. And next week we'll have the best players to wear in the 70s, which there's some good players in the 70s.
Yeah,
there were some good 60s too, but some Hall of Fame. Well, you know, and again, I'll say this again, and I only do this 1 week at a time. I don't look far ahead. There's been at least one Hall of Famer in every group from 0 to, I mean, well, not zeros, but from 1 to 9, from 10 to, you know, I do 10 to 20, 10 to 19, 20 to 29. The Packers have had at least one Hall of Famer in each group. That's impressive to me.
That's great. No, that's awesome, and I'm just riding your coattails, both of you. So, it's always fun. I mean, this was a good discussion. So, everybody have a very healthy and safe and happy 4th of July. We will be back at it again next week. Everybody enjoy your weekend, and as always, go Pack, go.